our senior leaders' bonuses are linked to how we do when it comes to sustainability. 20% of their payout is linked to sustainability performance, and for the 400 top leaders, it's actually 40%.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome back to Circularity FM and our series featuring highlights from the Loop Forum 2025. Loop Forum is the leading Nordic business event, spotlighting circularity as a key driver for building future-proof businesses. In this episode, we hear from Katrin Grütter, Corporate Affairs Director at Mars Wrigley Nordics. She speaks about Mars' net zero roadmap, how the company has reduced emissions while growing, and why tackling Scope 3 emissions in the value chain is key to reaching long-term sustainability. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm.
So welcome back from lunch. It's getting harder and harder to compete with the nice and sunny weather, I guess. But we're doing everything we can, and I'm very pleased to introduce to you our next speaker, the Corporate Affairs Director at Mars. Not the planet Mars, but Mars Incorporated. So Katrin, please join me.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and welcome. You can come closer if you want, but otherwise there's room for more to join later. So I have the pleasure of presenting a bit about our net zero roadmap, but also how we've come on this journey so far and some practical examples. So firstly, I don't see the slides changing. Good. So Mars Incorporated is a big business. We have a big footprint on the world. We have also more than 500 million pets that we actually serve. So you might know us for chocolate and snacking. You might also know some of our food products, but we also serve more than 500 million pets. We also produce 85 billion snacks a year. So there is a lot of production going on in our value chain. We are 150,000 associates, which is what we call our employees worldwide. And you can time that with four if you also take our extended value chain into account. We contribute 140 billion to the global GDP, so also a bit of impact, and also something we give back. You might see in the corner that we also have a footprint. It comes with this size of production, so it's the size of a small country, and here we have Finland. So what do we do about that? It comes from, first of all, let's go into the business. It comes from this. This is what we produce. We have a lot of both pet products, but we also have a lot of vet services. We have scientific centers. We have laboratories. So actually, the whole pet care chain is a big part of our business. It accounts for more than 50% of our revenue. And then in the bottom, you see some of our most well-known brands. On top of that, we also have our food brands, so Dolmio and Rice. So a relatively large portfolio. We were founded in 1911, so more than a century ago. We are based with our headquarters in Virginia, in Washington. So we are a U.S. company, and we are privately owned. So the Maas family still owns today. They have 100% ownership. And their decisions also impact the business we have today. A lot of more examples on how much we produce, but I won't go into that. Instead, I will talk a bit about our compass, which is what guides our business. It's actually what we call our business objectives. So the family has given us this, and as long as we follow these four quadrants, then we have a direction. So what you will see is that the top half of this quadrant is the normal financial targets that you have in a business. We need to earn some money. We also need to create some quality growth. With that, we mean that we also want to have a business in a century. So what do we do to improve our portfolio? What kind of investments do we make? Do we have the right categories? All of that. The second half of the quadrant, so the bottom, is about our non-financial objectives. So on the trusted partner, we ask all our stakeholders, so what do you think about Maas? How is it to work with us? Can we make longer-term contracts? We're really in it for the long run. We are allowed to make really long contracts, long partnerships. We invest more than 90% of our profit back into the business. So this pink quadrant is super important for us. The one I'm going to speak about today is the orange one, so our positive societal impact. It's also where we have our metrics, which are related to our net zero emissions, and also where we have all our strategies when it comes to our sustainable in a generation strategy. Then you can see a couple of numbers, 1,700 and 400. That's because our senior leaders' bonuses are linked to how we do when it comes to sustainability. So 20% of their payout is linked to the 1,700 senior leaders. And for the 400 top leaders, it's actually 40%. So a lot of their bonuses are based on how they perform on sustainability. So we've worked with sustainability for a long time. It's not something that is new to us. We started in 2007, and over the first 7 years, we did a lot of work to understand what is sustainability about, what kind of goals can we set. We also actually contributed to developing the science-based initiative targets, so a lot to be proud of here. In the last 10 years, we have worked with our understanding how our emissions, where they're coming from, what we can do to reduce them. We've set like milestones. So we have worked with 5 years milestones. We set the first one in 2015. We had one in 2020 that we succeeded with. And then we have a new one coming up end of 2025. So this is part of our net zero roadmap to have these smaller stretches. And we put in the strategies with like 3 years business objectives to reach them. The last part is to say that you can set a goal, but then you can also see that you can achieve it, and then you can be more ambitious. So we started out with looking at our direct operations, so scope 1 and 2, and then we saw that that was possible to achieve, and we extended it a couple of times so that our strategy today is to reach net zero by the 2050 and cut our emissions in half by 2030. And then in 2023, we also released a net zero roadmap. It's an open source document. It's 45 pages. It's online. It's available for everyone. It kind of specifies how we believe that we will reach net zero, but it also offers a lot of insights and details that other businesses and companies can look at if they're going on the journey. So our targets for 2024 will be announced during the summer. Let's dive into the net zero roadmap. And because you don't have 45 pages in front of you right now, here you have the recap. These are the 5 fundamentals that we believe is essential if you want to achieve net zero, at least if you're a business with the scope that we have. So you have to include all of the emissions across your full value chain, of course. So that includes what you what your own direct operations emit, but also what scope 2 and scope 3. And I'll get a bit more into that. But everything you need to take into account. And you don't do it only downstreams, you also do it upstreams. At least that's what we've done. So we've looked at how the farmer is growing his crops, what kind of fertilizers he's using, what kind of vehicle he takes when he drives it to the warehouse or to the port. We also looked at how it ends up with you guys. So if you go and buy, what kind of transportation do you take to get your groceries home from the store? What kind of anesthesia is used during our surgeries at the vet clinics? And also, what kind of energy consumption do you use when you heat up our rice in the microwave? So downstreams and upstreams. And in between you and me as a business, we also have some retailers. So a lot of partnerships goes into this. The second one is prioritizing performance over promise. Again, I will come back to that. But one thing is promising something and putting in a date far ahead in the future. Another one is delivering progress continuously until you reach that date. Then you mark progress with milestones. I've said it already. We believe that that's the way to cut it, this big elephant, into smaller chunks. We work with 5 years milestones, but we put those 5 years milestones into our business strategies on a 3-year basis. So we look 3 years ahead, what do we want to achieve? And then we have those 5 years targets. And sometimes we need to adjust them. Sometimes we need to be more ambitious. Other times there is an unforeseen barrier that we need to overcome. But in the long term, it leads us with like a relatively straight downwards facing trend. So I'll dive into that as well. Then we all need to remember that some of the decisions we make today will have an impact long term. So that means what kind of car are you buying? What kind of factory are you investing in? What kind of partnership contract do you make? How long is that contract? Can you get out of it? Do you have any impact on how they, if it's a contract with a farmer, how do they farm? So you need to take into account everything here because it has an impact. And then the controversial one, number 5, you won't get to net zero. Our business won't get to net zero. It's not possible. The United Nations has said so. When we talk about net zero, it's getting as close to net zero as possible. But there will always be some emissions that you can't really avoid because we are producing something. So we are planning to offset those with high quality carbon offsets or removal credits. When you follow the SBTi targets and we have those approved, you're not allowed to look at credits until the last year of your plan. That would for us be in 2049. So we have far ahead or we are far from that. So we'll have a look at that when we get to that stage. Maybe it won't be 20%. Maybe it'll be less. Maybe we have new technology that will get us there. But just trying to differentiate what this net zero actually means. Then a bit of a technical one. So we're running a bit out of time. So we need to start to do something. So that's kind of an encouragement from our side. The whole net zero roadmap that we've launched is based on science. When you do commit to a date, so for our instance, it's 2050. You have a period of time, and in that time, you will emit a lot of emissions. How much it will be depends on what you do in that time zone. So instead of talking about when you'll reach that date, which will be in 2050, let's talk about how we reduce it. So if we didn't do anything, but just started reducing our emissions in 2049, we would be closer to the brown thing. So we would have like 2 times climate impact. If we didn't do anything, our climate impact would be following our sales, which are trending upwards. Instead, what we've done is we've made the strategy, we've committed to an interim target, we've also committed to some milestones, and we're now looking at what is under the curve. So you can actually having the same date and the same target, but you can in the end have let out different amount of emissions. So if we dive into what is behind the green one, which is our strategy, you can see that the first 7 years, which was from 2015 until 2022, we set the goals. We also already peaked our emission in 2018. So that's the last year where we had the highest amount of emissions. Since then, we've decreased. And then from 2022 and 2030, we now have the resources to back up our plans. We have a plan. And we also have the partnership. So we're really comfortable. I believe this is both possible, but also affordable to reach this 2030 target. Where it's get a bit more difficult and where we believe it's the hardest is actually from 2030 to 2050. That's because we already now can see there are a lot of barriers. So some of them are cost related. It's too expensive, the technology. Sometimes it's because the technology is not even available at this point in time. So we don't know what to do. But we can find out, we can invest in science, we can invest in new technologies. The third one is regulatory. So we also need to see what can we do to impact the current legislation or to get better infrastructure across Europe. For example, when it comes to packaging, waste reductions, all of that. So there are some barriers. When we then get to 2050 and beyond, let's see where we are. We won't be at zero, but hopefully we'll be at 20. Will there be ups and downs? Probably. I don't think that anyone can say that they'll hit like a straight line going down. So some years will be better. Some years we might be slightly worse. But if you have a plan, it's easier to follow up and make progress. Then this one, my dear CEO is super happy to present, and So am I. It actually shows that while we peaked in 2018, we have grown our sales really a lot while decreasing. So we've grown our business 37% while decreasing 23%. This is not super easy to do. It's actually one of the most difficult things to kind of like get that divide in the bigger directions.
And these were the numbers from 2023. Mars continued in 2024 to decouple its carbon emissions from its growth. Mars grew over 69% to approximately 55 billion in annual net sales. At the same time, Mars reduced its carbon footprint by 16.4% compared to its 2015 baseline. Much of the progress has come from accelerating agricultural partnerships. More than 60 projects in 29 countries are currently underway to improve the livelihoods of farmers while making their businesses and their land more resilient for generations to come.
So really, really happy about this. It also proves that the strategy and the net zero roadmap we have today is working. So we're actually achieving our targets and getting closer to zero. So then we're diving into our emissions. So what is behind when we look at getting to net zero? We've mapped it out and it looks relatively green, which means that more or less every emission we have, unless the 4%, comes from our scope 3 emissions. And just a quick recap, scope 1 and 2 is our direct emissions. So what we have in control, what comes from our factories, our vehicles, stuff like that. Scope 3 is what we see in our extended value chain. So what is our farmers doing, our customers, our suppliers, how do they grow the crops? So here we need to partner because we don't have direct control over these emissions. But we do believe that we have accountability and responsibility for them. So if we dive into what it looks like, you can see that a really, really big chunk is agriculture. This is how the farmers produce our cocoa that we use, the sugar we use, the palm oil that we use, the rice, how we source our fish, all the different ingredients that goes into our products. You will also see that a big chunk is land use change. So unfortunately, there is still some areas where you cut down ecosystems, destroy ecosystems to make room for farm and land. And we also take accountability for that. So we don't want to be part of that. So we're trying to reduce that as much as we can. That goes into our net zero roadmap, but it also goes into the investments we make in our greater extended sustainable energy generation strategy. We reduced actually land use by 6% from 2022 to 2023. So it is possible to also make some reductions here. I'll come into to one of the examples that we have that are more or less concrete. Then retail. Retail is our customers, a lot of our customers. Logistics, how we transport our products, packaging. It can both be the waste, but also, of course, what kind of products or elements that goes into the packaging. And other is the vehicle that transport our associates or our employees back and forth to job. It can also be related to our vet services. And that leads me to a couple of examples. So how does progress look in practice? One of the things is that we actually have polygon mapped more than 89% of our cocoa farms. And you might ask what polygon mapping is. Polygon mapping is when you, instead of like looking at a cocoa farm and putting a GPS dot at where the farmhouse is, you mark the whole fence, so of the outer farm. So how big is the size of the farm? If you do that, it's possible to monitor with a satellite, and then you can see if there's been any changes in the size of the farm. Have they cut down forest to extend the farm? And then you are able to see if land use has changed. So it's super, super important for us because cocoa farmers, as you can see, we have 250,000. We've mapped 250,000 and we've mapped 215,000. So it's a lot of farms. It's a lot of manual work. It's actually going out there to the individual farm and mapping out, going like around the farm and securing this. This is one of the measures we use to see if we can reduce the land use and also ensure that we're not contributing to deforestation. Then we also can proudly say that we now have a deforestation-free palm oil supply chain. We started out with mapping, and this is more than just a couple of years ago. It's a longer journey, but we found out that we had more than 1,500 different palm oil mills. That's a lot. It's more or less impossible for us to have a close relationship to all of those and to also invest in how they produce. So we cut that down to 200. And over the last couple of years, we reduced to less than 100 palm oil farms or mills. And that makes us able to partner in long-term contracts to talk to them about how can we make it more sustainable? How are we growing the crops? So this journey is super vital again, but it also means that you need to take back the control you can of your extended supply chain and decide how many suppliers is enough for you. Let me see. There we go. I hope you can see it. This is our ice cream factory in Steinberg in France. It's just an example, but this is actually a big news because it hasn't been published yet, so you're the first to know. But we are now running our European factories for Maastricht on 100% renewable electricity. That is reducing our scope 1 and 2 with further 5% on where we are today. So it's a big reduction. It's also something we've worked on for a couple of years, but we're really happy to get there. So we're working. The first two examples were in scope 3. The other one here is in scope 2. So we're working all over the place. Then another one that is more linked to our logistics is the fact that we've now introduced 2 trucks on the roads, on the European roads. 298 will follow in the next couple of years. It's a huge investment. We're doing this with Enride, but it also means that we can now say that we are reducing 300,000 kilometers a year with fossil fuel and changing to a more sustainable energy source. So this is related to our pet farm, our pet care production, where we have our pet factories and where they drive it to our pet warehouses. The little one here is that something that I have a bit of impact on is our Nordic business. So all of this is, of course, going on globally. But in our Nordic business, we've also made some changes. So we are now running on like 98% hybrid or electric cars for our sales fleet. The 2%, it might be less or it might be more, but it's one car in the north of Norway where we don't want to change it out because from a safety perspective, there is still so much snow and you don't have plug-ins all over Norway. It's a very big country. So one of them has kept their fossil car for now, but safety first. Then the other one, I opened up our new net zero warehouse in Dublin last year. It was super nice to see this. We built it from scratch, not us, but we partnered with someone that built it from scratch. We were there to see through the whole phase. We also saw it fill up with products. It's pretty amazing. But it's one of its first kinds in Ireland. So again, Nordics is a bit more advanced when it comes to sustainability, but we're also progressing in all the markets where we can. We also opened up a similar warehouse in Helsinki in Finland and are now running a more net zero business. And then because I work with this every day, I also get to see all the pilots. So we run a million like pilots. Like there is a paper package packaging in some factories. There are other pilots, but one that I fell over the other day was this one, where we're actually trying to capture the anesthetic gases from our vet clinics and our vet hospitals to try to reuse it. They're also looking at trying to, instead of having reusable materials for the surgeries, that trying to use something that is more more sustainable and in metal instead. So we need to be curious. That is where I come from. We need to be open to see if we can find new ways of doing things. I think we can all have a role to play, not only the senior leaders in a global business, but also the local leaders, but also everyday associates, because we all see the small things that might be able to change and we can make an impact.
In the meantime, about 6 months after this talk was given, Mars added one more instrument. To help drive continued progress, the company has launched the Mars Sustainability Investment Fund. It is dedicated to fostering business innovation and growth. The $250 million fund aims to provide capital to companies developing cutting-edge solutions that address key industry sustainability challenges.
So this is how we view the world. So the world we want tomorrow starts with how we do business today. This is our purpose. We say how. I would also add with who, because who are we partnering with? Who is going to get us there? Maybe it might be some of you guys in the room that I need to talk to afterwards. It might be that it's some of our customers or we get new ideas later on. By the end of the day, we won't be able to solve this as Mars. We need to work together and collaborate. We also might not get there by...
This was the third episode in our series about the Loop Forum 2025. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, please sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.